Your horoscope will put you there, Capesus. Like it or not.
Like feeling guilty that you know that all these things.
All these things are there at the biological memory bank. You're going to put labels in it by the language. But you have a problem. You see, you speak English. And you understand English. And you label all your problems in English. Now, if you spoke French, English would mean a doggone thing as far as your problems are concerned. So each one is locked into his fixation of his ethnic opportunity. So the freedom is in the word, and the prison is in the word. If you're a prisoner to French, because you're fixed to French, you can find freedom in English. If you're a prisoner in English, you may find freedom in French. So wherever you don't have a comprehensive relationship with the term to identify your behavior, you may have freedom.
And the more intellectual you get, and the more groups you join, and the more books you read, and the more matrices you pick up as vocabulary, the more you're building yourself a prison.
Congratulations. Read my guess.
Wow. And why do you have to get rid of so much?
That's why it is said, unless you're born again, you can't enter. And unless you become like one of these, thou canst not enter either.
The accumulation of that knowledge is necessary to figure out its limitation.
Correct. So, if you got on the phone and heard me saying, Chang Wang Lo Bi Ka Nya Wa Ya Telephona, Ma Ma Se Di Ka Chiu Ka Bang La Telephona, E Se Ma Di Be Ti Ki Ma La Wa Ka Mi Ya Ta Ye Telephona. Which word do you recognize?
Telephone.
I can't change it in whatever language I try because the telephone doesn't belong to that country. But if the telephone was a word that belonged to that country, you wouldn't recognize it in a conversation. That's the funny part.
In Spanish, they always
say
hamburger.
Mm-hmm. And for that reason, the freedom is in the word as well as the prison is in the word. You are your own heaven and hell with your tongue. Nobody else is doing it to you. And the only price you have to pay is love. Only price to pay to be free.
If you went around saying love, 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 day or day, you know, you might get rid of some of this stuff.
Spell love back with all you got. Keep on evolving, because the cosmic business house doesn't shut down till midnight eternity, and Dario is not going to go out of business. So you got all eternity to evolve. That's why it's called ever new love, ever new joy. If it was not ever new, you'd get bored with it. But if because it's ever new and unanticipatory, that means you cannot anticipate it, what it will feel like and what it will do. There is never enough of it. Can you have enough love? Or feel you've got enough?
Like that postcard, all I want is a little more than I'll ever have.
Yeah.
get the feeling sometimes you're going to burst your cocoon.
See, Yukteswar told Yogananda, would you give me unconditional love? That's quite a statement. Most of us give conditional love. That's nothing to feel sad about. That you find it difficult to give unconditional love. But it takes a great deal to give unconditional love. Because you're forced to relive a situation as a sperm going to the ovum, opportunity for becoming a twin at the time when you were going to adopt in the ovum or be just a single child. No greater love than he who would lay down his life for his fellow man is not after you're born, it's before you're born. You have to test yourself there biologically. If you are willing to let the runner-up join you and dock in the ovum, and both of you come out human beings as twins or triplets, you really got to trust that other joker, that he don't jump ahead of you and beat you and leave you stuck in the mire of here. And that's how Siamese kids come out, and you can tell who is the thief and who is not the thief, who disobeyed the laws and who didn't disobey the laws. Because when they come out, they're stuck. And nature doesn't allow violation of our laws. She gives you every opportunity to experience the law and love. But then you violate because you can't time yourself to pay the price. So the Siamese twin comes out. And one head is always a few centimeters higher than the other. Then you know which one didn't obey the rules. The one whose head is higher than the other one, he disobeyed. While the other one below was lowering down to give him a chance, no greater love than he would lay down his life for his fellow man. Biologically, it's occurring here. So slow down and trust the other one. And we'll run up to the open. And incorrect timing, they're locked. Every law works. So when you come out and you see twins coming out, start locking their heads into each other, Siamese twins, they obeyed. And number one is number one, coming out first. By virtue of his position, the assigned number to be assigned over. Number two is gaining exit to join the group by greater love. And down the line, if it's triplets, quads, or sprints, all the way down, each one is trusted. Now you remember we had a triplet in our class there in school?
Three of them.
Three of them. Good. And you remember how each one acted? The most dominant one was the middle one, Karen. And the little one, who was number one, was always condescending and let the middle have their way. She'd give the shirt off her back, or her panties off her body, for her sister to run. And she was the shortest one. And the one who was the runner-up was a big, vibrant woman. And the brother, Machu. We had all of this in college. We had a chance to study formal confrontation.
why would it be done with a twin that would run in a family? It would almost seem like an individual thing, you know, individuality that would push the law that way. Oh no, wait, you said it was an act of love when a second was allowed. That's unfair.
Yes, because each ovum is already assigned its numerical value, and therefore the sperm of that numerical value, after the teaming among the sperms, has to match, otherwise they can't bond. That doesn't say you cannot do artificial insemination, but invariably, when they do that, 9 times out of 10, if you had a scope to track down the sperm that is selected, it's the same numerical frequency, because it would be vital enough to be selected over all the rest when the donor gives it to the bank. And they will use it, a funny phenomenon, they're puzzled with that phenomenon. You have a seminal bank where the donor gives the semen, and then they use it to fertilize the woman. The numerical numbers seems to click in electromagnetic, and radionics is backing it up now. That they can track, there's some kind of numerical ratio to match. So, a woman has one menstruation every 28 days. Therefore, if she gets pregnant at 23 years of age and she began her menstruation at 12 and a half, you can track down the numerical value or number of that ovum. You want to try out? See, let's forget a calculation. Say 12 and a half years of age is her first menstruation in the month of June. And she gets pregnant at 22. And she has one menstruation per month, that's 13 months to the year, menstruations to the year. One every full moon, that's every 28 days. And if she gets pregnant in the month of September, in her 22nd birthday,
in September?
Mm-hmm. What number ovum will that be? Ovum 162, right?
Yeah.
Good, fine. So when she married and husband comes to her and ovum 162 is the time when her body is vibrating and signaling to her husband, this is ovum 162, calling sperm 162, calling sperm 162. Ultrasonic communication between the two forms. So he feels horny all of a sudden, they make love, she gets pregnant in the afternoon. Then when the baby is born, that's a year after. 9 months in the womb, 3 months in the father's testes, is 1 year.
That's how long the sperm
cell, 3 months? My friend. If you don't use it, what are you going to do with it? Throw it away? The sperms are always stored up in the unused, in the person in the male's body.
The sperms, after 3 months they die.
After 90 days, because why? You have to have a physiological law to back it up.
Well, they have apparently an aging process. Well, I don't know why they age in ovum. Ovums don't.
Ovum's age off every 28 days.
Yeah, but I mean, there's
sperms have 90 days.
She has that amount. Well, sperms are being produced and born. The ovum essentially are born at the woman's birth and die in sequence of moon, lunar.
And
sequence.
The man is replenishing every 90 days.
Every 90 days.
Yeah, because why? The planet Earth is moving in four quadrants every 90 days.
Okay.
There's a time and a place and a season for everything, not for something. This is a natural law of nature going on. You like it or not, it doesn't give a hoot. And all your conversation in your brain ain't going to change the fact of how you operate. That's the difference between the realized man and the non-realized man. The realized man is a master. The non-realized man is floundering around calling himself a disciple. It's enough that we be friends. I'm not your master and you're not my disciple. You are you. The only difference is I may have a head start in the comprehension of me, making it possible for you to grasp a comprehension of you. But when you start comprehending you as you, then we are friends. Why? Because you live what you say without any doubt. Feel me? And that's exactly what you've got in physics to work with. Reality is very, very fundamental. The ovum is going to signal, because it means the ovum opportunity to fertilize and become complete. Otherwise it'll be phased out again for the next 28 days. Sperm is though. After 90 days they're reabsorbed and start all over again. And nature will phase out sperms out of the man's body, like it or not. If he doesn't have sex, he'll still have a nocturnal ejaculation that he doesn't even know he has it. So that's nature's own laws for what? Compensatory evolution by virtue of love. It's not pragmatic in the sense that it's unrelated to certain laws. It is pragmatic and at the same time cosmologically authoritative in its own laws. You got to live with it to find out what it's doing for you. Then you begin to let go, let God work through you. So, for that reason, the sperm is attracted to the signal of the ovum. And when they do bond, then the product is a product of sperm and ovum. So when you look at yourself, when you look at your neighbor, do you see anything different than the result of sperm and ovum? And the winner is born, a loser can be born, but you can make yourself a loser all your life by mucking it up. But you're supposed to muck it up first for 30 years to find out that you're mucking up. And then when you find out that you're mucking up, there's nobody to blame. But in the early stages, you may think there's somebody to blame for mucking up after you find that you're suffering, only to find out Saturn return is placed there to give you your discipline. So there's nobody to blame. The blueprint requires that you do what? Muck up for 30 days, years, and clean up for 30 years, and enjoy the rest. Plus, minus, neutral, yes, no, maybe. You won't live it, like it or not. You may not understand it right away. But give yourself enough time to go through it.
If the first 30 years is an oral reflex, which I think I heard you say, what is the second 30?
Neural.
A neural?
Neural? In other words, thinking about what you're eating?
Then the next 30 years on,
what
optic and sonic reflex. absolute. But you see, the thing is this, if you keep saying you have years to live, be my guest and die before your time. Saturn will make his return many times. Don't get freaked out with it. The point is that living in the now is the liberation from the conditions imposed by the planetary systems on your mechanism to make you face yourself.
It's interesting that I believe the Greek word for Saturn was Chronos, which is time.
Exactly.
Father Time.
Yeah, so if you have to live in the now, you beat Father Time in his own game. Because spelled now backwards.
One.
Free men all lord of yourselves. Not what you do alone, but what you say and do gives you the freedom. So that's the whole important thing. To know without doubt that what you say you are going to do. And do it. Because then you have no fear of loving unconditionally. Very difficult. I don't say it's easy. Very simple to steep, like my friend Andy in Flagstaff, in the car.
El Paso?
No, this is
another one. Okay.
He would say it's too simple or too difficult to live. Ginger nothing. You prefer it.
Well, this is the Indian. I she said something about him, but I didn't get the details on that
she,
he was
he
afraid.
He freaked her out. She said, can you tell me something of me? And what can I do? And he said, are you giving me permission to invade the privacy of your mind? Well, if you do, I'll tell you one thing. Quit doubting it.
Quit doubting your mind?
Trust your brain and live it.
Is this someone you met at when you lived on the reservation?
It's funny how you walked in the room to see Kriyananda. I had gone to see Kriyananda in Sedona, Arizona, and we were visiting. And he had come with his wife. And he walked in the room, and we locked eyes right away. And he started shaking and shivering. And his wife couldn't understand what's the matter. So he sat down very quietly. And then when Kriyananda came out, he started talking to Kriyananda, and he was inviting Kriyananda to come. He heard of him, he wanted to come to the reservation. Kriyananda says, well, according to his plans, he may have an opportunity or he may not. And left it like that. And I was sitting not too far. And he got up to go out. And I was coming out and heading to my car. And then he walked over and he said, brother, I said, yeah, how would you like to come and visit me at my reservation? I said, thank you. And he gave me his address and I left. And I saw him about 6 weeks after. And that's when he made a remark. He said, you got a strange pair of eyes. I said, okay, can't understand it, but I know you somehow you saw something in me that keeps you puzzled. And so you just gotta expose the complex vision, that's all. If you give the friends. John Andre went to see him. I took John Andre to see him. I freaked out John Andre. You see, we went down with John and Margaret Conklin. And I always, whenever I go to see Andre, his name is Andre Chipar Eagle.
That's War Eagle. Okay, I was going to ask.
And there's always something unusual happening every time I go to see him. So this particular day we're going on and...
This trip?
Huh? This
time?
Oh, yeah.
This trip the other day?
No, they had the, you know, that was before, you know, we went down last year. Mm-hmm. And we arrived at the house and the rain had fallen. Just the funniest thing. And so our Eagle was remarking, "How come, brother, whenever you come, the rain always falls?" And John was very shook up. And I laughed. I said, "You know me. King David, when he was accused for being a bad guy, the true mouth, and he had to pray for 7 days and 7 nights and wear sackcloth. And he go and he touched the ark. The only thing that proved that he was innocent was the rain." But that's what follows me wherever I go, in the rain. Prove my innocence. So he laughed, and then we started visiting with John. He's kind of positive about all the things he's talking, dynamics of physics, and get into the deep metaphor, internal laws. And then we came out. And then War Eagle is saying, "You know, many times brother comes here and we talk about Yogananda. And he'd always say, he never would leave me when he visited me without giving me some gift from Yogananda. Or Yogananda would always give him some kind of a blessing." And I said, "Yes, look up in the sky right now." And there was a double rainbow. Two rainbows in the sky, one up here. And that really freaked out John Andre and Margaret, because in a clear blue sky, right there, not a cloud in the sky, and you got two rainbows. It stayed there for about 10 minutes and it disappeared. So this trip, Jinjo went back with a friend. And it was comical. She said, "War Eagle's talking about you. And the other stuff, but whenever I come around, or any friends come around, Yogananda is always there." And she said, "Strange enough, rain started to fall as soon as he mentioned Yogananda's name." And his wife, Mary was his wife. Blue bonnet. She says, "Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if I see a rainbow after the rainfall, because I know that is because." And the rain finished, and the rain to leave to go back to Flagstaff, right down here to the rainbow in the sky. There's some freaky things happening up there. I said to her, "There are no coincidences, it's all unified feeling. If you function in unified feeling, there are no miracles either." That's what the autobiography of the yogi called the law of miracles, the unified feeling. Energy equals to the mass times the velocity of light spirit. But how many of us can work with it? at the level of science versus the level of mechanics. We made the atom bomb. We are on the way to Star Wars Holocaust. But what will freak out the great powers is when they fire off their bombs to knock out each other, a group of people resonating sonics and exploding it in the sky before they ever got off the ground. Think of that one.
Making it appear like something went wrong in a mechanism?
Yeah. Faulty computer.
Faulty computer.
That's our option.
I take great comfort in that. I take great comfort in that.
A civilization or a humanistic existence, rest assured, atomic war was there. Preceded it to force it to migrate. And those who survive in the migration are the ones who are capable of phasing down, to let those survive. The others have to remain a sort of consequences. So if you trace back to all the ancient writings, you rather see the migratory ones that survive are the ones who are given a chance to make up for their love. The ones who are suffering the consequences is their inability to love beyond the limitation of their fixation.
Well, I understand that the survivors were concentrated in the Middle East, and you have such...
Well, you have a phenomenon like that when the Pharaoh refused to let the people go out of Egypt. His love for his fixation created his downfall. Mm-hmm. Their love for the freedom generated the survival, but out of that their love also generated a hatred, because they were the most dogmatic and violent people that resorted to killing off by praying to God to give them 24 more hours to survive to shoot down the enemy. That's what Joshua did. He didn't ask for the 24 hours of life to lift up society. He asked to do what? To destroy life. Therefore, his people will suffer the consequences in some form. So when you look at Auschwitz, it's no surprise that that phenomenon came in the 20th century. All laws have to be compensated, and no one is to blame, or no one is to point the accusing finger at and be victimized. It's just that the laws of nature work their way out in confronting groups and individuals to live what they see.
Well, remember that Joshua was not allowed to because of the
well, in Atlantis, in the civilization of Atlantis, what Mengele was accused of in this incarnation went on much more bizarre in Atlantis.
For the experimentation.
So.
There's no genetic.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing new, so we can't overexpose it to the public and ready for the bizarre behavior of their fellow men. After all, when you take a man and evolve him out of a gorilla, what do you want?
They're at it again. I understand the Red Army surgeons are probably the most bizarre right now on the planet when they use genetic experiments. You know, mixing animals. They just have a fascination with that. They just have a fascination with Atlantis and get a man and here they are again.
We've already mated human cell with tobacco, and you know it sounds like a joke to you. Now you don't have to buy a pack of cigarettes.
Well,
I'm
really glad that you're
I don't know, but it's the only practical purpose I can see of that. But of course, they are amorphous. They don't grow into any shape, but they're working on that, and I assume it's probably a matter of time. They're chicken and yeast. I'm sure there's a joke about that someplace too. But they've done a lot of preliminary stuff like that, where they've definitely been in the science journals and that.
You must remember one thing. Man is going to demonstrate his dominion over his environment at the expense of his own integrity, just to prove that he's superior. But his problem begins in his language, when he disassociates his identity from the environment, calling it a it. And only look at himself as a he-she. And even in that state, he wants to make it all he. This is what man is doing to himself. But the realized man cannot stop it or impose on it. He can only dispose of it at the critical moment of self-destruction. The great as Jesus is, he couldn't say to the Roman government, "Look, get the hell out of this country and let these people their freedom." But they wanted that from him. They wanted to force him to make that kind of a contribution. So they crave him, and then in the end they realize he's not going to do it, so what? They chuck him out in place of Barabbas, who was a revolutionary. Because they figure by violence they'll get back what they want. Man is that kind of a creature. No matter what ethnic group he comes from, he's going to behave with his violence in terms of getting even. It's difficult to live the realized life, because the realized life is not here to oppose or impose, only to depose under stress. You gotta wait to the critical moment before you can act that out. And that waiting is very, very heartrending for the people around who have to go through.
Now that's interesting. You once said that besides he, she, it now exists in the form of the language Esperanza, which never did get off the ground. If people around the globe spoke that language,
yes,
it would sort of force you to eat on time, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
So obviously a great thinker came up with the conception of a language that had all four of those elements in it. So what happened that got sabotaged and didn't, is it just our, just that we weren't ready for a now language?
No. But even in a now language behavior, remember one thing. There are 2 billion people on the planet. It's not an en masse evolutionary group working towards an en masse liberation of themselves. Because that will throw creative intelligence out of business. Creative intelligence has no intention to go out of business, let alone to allow your creation to set up your own franchises. But you allow the creation to have dominion over its environment by virtue of self-application in the process of self-confrontation. And give it the freedom to feel that it can withhold its love from its creator and bargain for anything it would crave. So creative intelligence is playing a very fantastic game and gambling upon it, knowing fully well there are no room for the creation to win other than to surrender in terms of unconditional love to the creator. By the same token, the creator is gambling that when this unconditional love is generated by the creation, he is capable of matching it by fusing himself into the creation and the two becoming one. You see me, you see the Father, I am the Father of one.
So the Creator is then banking on the fact that man will not do that, will not give that unconditional love.
No, I'm not saying man will not give it. He's banking that man will play every game to avoid giving it.
Well, in other words, he's banking that man will delay or find every excuse for not doing it.
Right. And that's what he wants in the first place, because why? He'll be out of business overnight. Everybody will suddenly wake up and into the reality of themselves, and where would the confrontation be?
We'd all be happy, Bob, and
Is that the story?
Because our equality of abilities to manifest our words on command performance gives no man any more challenge.
Evolution is a game.
If you say, I'm going to Las Vegas and I walk away with $1 million cash, legitimately playing the game, and you do it, and Uncle Sam has paid his share and everybody, and you do walk away, and then you turn around and find out that everybody has the same access,
it would be no problem.
There would be no more Las Vegas to go to. Why?
Las Vegas with gratitude.
Right. Because then the people who own Las Vegas will have the same right to say what?
They could do the same thing. But also, even if Las Vegas had eternal amount of bucks, it would take something out of it, because a lot of life is one-upmanship.
Uh-huh.
I have a little more than you do.
Exactly.
And my aura is a little clearer than yours.
Right, exactly.
I've got a little more money. Or
this competitive process is built in as a natural delay of the overall communication and appreciation or application or manifestation.
That's a zero-sum game. Someone has to lose for someone to win.
Now you see, that's where you can't make a front without the back, and top without the bottom, and up without the down.
Actually, it's two things to do, but some people lump that in with the fall.
True.
And yet, it's that complicating the mechanism, but the other thing is there anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why do you think Tibet fell to the communist Chinese, that they claim they had all this mystic and sonic power with their mantras, and they were just, most of the monks were massacred by these communists? Why did the creative intelligence allow that to happen? Just because it was in the script? Couldn't they use their sonic powers or whatever powers they had to save themselves?
Ask yourself how to do it after you did it.
Or how to do it?
Yeah. You ever ask yourself how Tibet got to be Tibet?
How what?
How the Tibet got to be Tibet?
Oh.
How the monks got to be free to go up and sit down in caves to pretend they're practicing something and calling it freedom and power structure. Ask yourself how they got there. What they did to get there. Then you'll have a true picture of why they deserve what they got. The same is true of why Japan became Japan. Who were the Japanese in the first place? You think the Japanese are people born in Japan? There were people like you and I come to a country like this.
That's right. They were not the there's an Indians in Japan.
Yeah, tell me more, man.
I think they're even redneck.
They did exactly what the pioneers did to this country by taking it away from the inhabitants. Like everything is... Conquest is mine, says the guy with the sword or the gun. But if Columbus, when he came here and he was rattling his musket in the name of Isabella, claimed this land, the guy behind the rock coming out with his feathers shooting an M16 machine gun, man, he had back to her name. He said, you can keep your dog on it. But he didn't meet nobody with a super weaponry. Good. We going up in space, in the illusion that what we got away on this planet will work. We're probing around for life out there. intelligent or less intelligent. Intelligent, it's a threat to us because we don't have a chance to survive against it. Less intelligent, we will dominate it to tell it, you shut up and stay off and don't come around. That's the choice we have.
In other words, we're actually looking for something else to conquer?
Tell me more, friend.
Isn't it fair?
Or maybe we're looking to be conquered.
We are already conquered if we can face the fact that the guy in the Alaska and Siberia may fire off his bomb by mistake. Not by, what you say, deliberate. We're going to be worse off. Let alone we'll try and mount here on this odd-looking creature in the sky flying around in some kind of gadget you may call a flying saucer. How in the hell he can fly around? When we only develop airplanes in the last some years, 6 or 8 years, we are so advanced. Well, we're going to pride ourselves because we fired off atomic bomb and all kinds of things. And we think everybody's got to look like us.
Well, maybe
we
just pretend he isn't there.
That's what I say. If Columbus came here, and by the time he was beating the gun with his musket and claiming the land, the guy behind the rock came out and started firing an M60 machine gun and looking like a savage. He'd have head back. But he didn't. All he found was the guy dressed up with leaves and waving a tomahawk made out of a rock and stick. So that's no threat to Columbus. And we live with this Colombian consciousness, but we're going to carry it where? Into time and space.
Colombia.
That everything is primitive or less developed than us. It's a very erroneous notion of the ego or nature.
Well, it's childish, but it's the government.
That you think it
is a
kind of cool
thing. Right, yeah, hopefully not.
Space cowboy, huh?
But this is where we're looking at what we're thinking, you see. Like the other night, I had thinking in my thing. Imagine. By mistake. On both sides of the nuclear weapon, the hatches suddenly start opening because the computers refuse to respond to human beings.
All right.
And the weapons are coming up from both sides of the globe. Neither side can gain or understand why it is opening up. But the fear of being accused for the first shot, how do you warn the other side that it's an uncontrolled mechanism?
Neither one side will believe the other.
Good.
Then because they haven't.
By the same token, how can you say to the other one, believe it or not, I will ask you to shoot down my equipment if it gets past a certain point, and I'm going to ask all my allies to intervene, to shoot down with whatever they got available to bring it down before it. But if it can't and it passed the danger zone out of all control, you're at disposal, do what you like. And if both sides try to knock it out and they don't succeed to knock it out, and the missiles fly past their destination and go on to another galactic, what will it do in terms of negotiating? The flew past, none of us could interfere, no matter what we tried with all our weaponry to stop the, well, we couldn't. But the thing didn't land in either side. But it flew over each side and went past out into space. How would we sit down to negotiate? This is where our love comes in now. both sides know something went wrong out of their control. Both sides try to warn the other with the belief that none would accept the other statement of truth. Both sides know they failed to stop it, and yet both sides survived, but it didn't land to destroy them. In the meantime, the beings who are responsible for this unusual phenomena are looking back to see how they're going to resolve the conflict between themselves. Because the material is gone, and they no longer have the dangerous weaponry to fire a second time. But the dangerous weaponry flew past its destination and never landed. And all the intervention on both sides to believe or disbelieve the other was employed to stop the weaponry and didn't stop it because they failed to make contact. It was too fast. And the beings who projected this sudden separation of no-fault failure, how do men begin to communicate in order to set up some type of existence with love? That's the problem. And that was what I was thinking of the other night. Place the Earth man into this predicament and see what he got. Don't worry about going out into space.
Yeah.
That is one equipment to produce this sudden condition.
And you have to solve these problems here.
The fact is that neither the two sides' weapon landed on the other side, even though it was not intended, and was by mistake of the equipment. And both sides failed to stop it by cooperation. And now they're left weaponless. Empty silos. Unexploded equipment out in space. How do they stop each other from surviving on the planet? Who's going to make the first move to the love?
Yeah, we could just start building.
But there is no equipment to go build back with. The material is not there to build it back. They're left empty for the first time, both sides. Equipment-wise, is not functioning.
That would be such a blessing.
Yeah, but then go to conventional water.
I don't know. I'd be such a trauma. Like, we'd almost have to share some sort of friendship because we've shared trauma. You know, even though it was
Do you think they could go? Did you see that movie Failsafe?
Yeah.
Do you think they had a basis of negotiation after what occurred?
Not exactly.
It's just about. Just about the same situation.
I would say this much. The fixations of both sides would generate a tremendous hurdle to bring love to the surface, that the offspring of both sides may have an opportunity to survive without really actively to take a great deal of love and trust.
Yeah. Well, trust is a thing. There's no trust now. How can we expect there to be trust then?
That's what we'll be forced to be generated out of them.
And then the whole Cold War came out of the quantum history.
We don't know if we can generate it until we're thrown into this situation. And this is a situation nobody has any weapon to fall back on. And there is no need to fight anybody because, well, we are at the mercy of each other's
on
armed feeling. For the first time you have a feeling of being unarmed, and you're forced now to communicate to survive.
Well, what if there is an external threat to the
The problem will always be, since there are no weapons to fall back in order to survive, whose language would take preference in terms of establishing priority to behavior? That will be the war. See where the war will be? Your language or my language will take priority to set up the behavior pattern. Do I adhere to your conceptual understanding of your language, or you adhere to my conceptual understanding? English would want to have theirs because there are many variables and possible ways to use English to mean different things.
But aren't most of the countries of the world are resisting Americanization, especially the French, which are taking telephone...
It's because of that condition that if I say go, in one man's meaning go means something else, and go means a lot different. English is the only language that go can have multiple meanings. So they realize they're a handicap if we use English to control our communication, because they don't know which meaning you mean when you say go. Whereas in French or any other language, if you use go, it has to be one type of a function and no other variations or possibilities of variation for the one thing. But English, you got that kind of phenomenon. One word can have so many different meanings.
Well, the French have organized language committees now, which are taking words like you said, which are telephone, which are part of, like, say, our culture, they can't translate it. They're taking words like that, that are, strictly speaking, just English words, and creating new French words so that it fits in their language, just so their language doesn't, become absorbed into Americanizations.
Hmm. See? If they're already resorting to that, does the war stop? Or the war has just begun again?
Just begun again.
That's what I'm saying. The other night I was thinking of this. Look where we have come to the next war in setting the boundary lines of understanding.
What's going on right now between Hispanics and, same kinds? Head Canada between Anglo and Gallic type,
right?
Curtain, they call it, the language.
Well, I know that inside myself is like when the war stops, things go really good, but if there's a war going on inside, my own self, things just don't go really well.
But you see, all wars stem from one condition. The same words felt back then.
Raw.
Material. Who would be scapegoat to provide the raw materials for the other fellow? See, and Einstein would say, peace is only the pause between two wars. As long as one guy got more raw material than the other, there's a pause. And if both sides have the equal amount of warm raw materials, there's no war.
There's more to it. Well, how do you feel about Nostradamus' prophecies?
Stars foretell, but they don't compel. As long as you wish to make them happen, according to the projection of the speaker, you will have your prophecies materializing for you. But if you don't adhere to the prophecy, you will change your destiny by virtue of what you say and do. This is your option.
That's very
good. 99% of the time, the projection of the destiny is valid. Only 1% of the time, the outcome is in your favor by acting what you say versus not acting what you see, and adhering to the 99% projection, craving for it to happen to give it credence.
Yes, but that's because the masses are unconscious, so they tend to fulfill these prophecies.
That's why they're craving for it to give it credence.
In their unconscious mind.
Yeah. And if you can act what you see, you break it, and then they are disappointed.
It's related to, I remember when the big earthquake was in Alaska, and I'd read about it in the Casey thing. So instead of being horrified for what was wrong with the people, you know, their accident, I remember jumping up out of bed, I was married then, and yelling to my wife, he was right, he was right, and being overjoyed, totally forgetting what was really going on in that process, as though that was validation. Then everything could be, it was like saying, well, then anything's okay, because if that's right, perhaps the rest is all right too, so everything is okay. It was an interesting phenomenon to look back at that,
well,
the feeling.
Well, Mahatma did say, I mean, you were really voicing his prophecy. He said there will be a threat from outer space, and that will bring peace because the earth will have to unite to face that. And I didn't
when,
say
what
it was
year did he say that?
Didn't say it was in the 90s. Didn't say it was a superpower. Could
no,
be exactly when
that.
He said it, you
he didn't
know.
Say that. It's not in the quatrains. It's in July 1998, unless I forget the word he used for the great powers of the world. Unless they do, as you say, approach each other with love, a basis of love and trust in negotiation, then the Grande Furia will reign supreme, which was his word for what the Hopis call the Gourd of Ashes, the Hopi prophecies. It would arise out of Bay Central Asia at that time. Astrologically, at that time, Pluto was over the first house of the United States for the first time in the U.S. history. Who, of course, governs